Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Drasky. Hotels, they're strange little kingdoms, homes away from home, where people are often not on their best behavior and sometimes do the strangest things, like building a fire under a suite's clawfoot bathtub in the strange hope of turning the tub into a deep fryer. Then there was the guest who refused any room number where the digits didn't add up to 9. Jacob Tomsky has penned a rollicking memoir titled Heads in Beds that chronicles his years working in the hotel industry. And in the book, he offers up all kinds of tips about how to score late checkouts and room upgrades. Jacob Tomsky joins us in just a moment. Later on this hour, the new speaker of the Missouri House of Representatives. But first up, Jacob Tomsky and the crazy world of the hospitality industry. Jacob joins us this morning from New Orleans. And Jacob, it's a pleasure to have you. Good morning.
It's a pleasure to be here, Steve. Thank you.
Well, knowing what you know now, do you ever hesitate to stay in a hotel room?
Well, it's interesting. This is the perfect time to ask me that question because, you know, I was so busy working in hotels that I never got a chance to stay in them. But I'm down here. I'm down here reading tonight, and I'm actually in a hotel, and I'm loving it. I couldn't be loving it more. It's so nice to be a guest.
But do you look at it a little suspiciously?
Well, you know, I always did. You know, even when I worked in hotels, you know, I know a lot more about what goes on in the rooms and what it takes to make a clean room. And I was in housekeeping and things like that, so I do have a sort of a different eye. But you know, it's kind of as if you worked in a movie theater and you were tearing tickets. It's pretty exciting when you get your opportunity to stop tearing tickets and actually go watch a movie. It's fun.
You know, there is a truth that emerges in this book about hotels and all the things that go on inside them, Jacob, and that is that everyone knows everything. Explain that. Everyone knows everything.
Well, yeah, we all, most of us have master keys, so that's any room, anytime, anywhere. So we're seeing your personal items, you know, we're transferring your phone calls, we're adding names to your room, we know what charges you're applying to your bill, we know what you're drinking in the bar, you know, oftentimes we know what's in your luggage, and just a thousand things. There's a voyeuristic aspect to it that keeps the job very interesting, and it's amazing how much we have our eyes on you.
Hey, and you said that sometimes employees actually go into rooms when they know that the guests aren't in them, just to sort of look around a little bit.
Yeah, I think when I started, I think I was more intrigued by the strangeness of being in someone's personal space. But you know, as you continue in the profession, you get more used to it. But yeah, you know, there's all types of employees out there, and you know, people do go into your room, and you know, when they're in there, they might look around. And so it's important to keep in mind that it's a private, public space, and that even though you feel like, you know, it's yours and yours alone, a lot of people have keys to your door, so you should act accordingly.
Well, that's a pretty big statement that a hotel room is a private public space, because most folks out there listening, I think, are going to assume that a hotel room is a private space.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you rent it for a certain amount of time, but I mean, the way the business is structured, the housekeeping needs to get in there, minibar needs to get in there to restock it. You might have engineering doing routine checks, going in there and making sure that the batteries in the smoke alarm are active, which is all important things, but it does lead to strangers being in your room.
You know, isn't there just sort of a natural tendency that people want to be a little mischievous in hotels, Jacob? Because, you know, many people want to bend the rules just a little bit in a hotel. How often did you see that in your 11 years in the industry?
Oh, God, I've seen it all. You know, and I hope I included a lot of that in Heads in Beds, just the crazy guest stories, guests that I thought I knew for years. And then you know, you discover one thing one day and you're like, wow. So it is just unbelievable the amount of variation in humanity. And people do tend to get primal when they're in a hotel. They treat the room in a way they would never treat any room in their own home. And they're messier and they're ruder to the staff than they would be to anyone in that situation. So I think it does open up something in some people that makes them feel powerful, or just they really just go at it when they're in a hotel, and it's interesting to watch. It can also be terrible.
And how oftentimes is the hotel staff sort of the victim as a result of that kind of behavior?
Oh, well, you know, there's housekeepers, unfortunately, you know, they're walking in on guests. Some of them guests want to be walked in on, with, you know, guests who don't know how to tie their robe properly and things like that. So there's that kind of sexual harassment. As far as verbal harassment and sometimes physical harassment, as a front desk agent, I mean, I got yelled at day in and day out. I got to the point, my skin was so thick that I could be getting screamed at, and I would just be thinking about other things. I would have this concerned look on my face, but I was really thinking about, like, you know, is my break in 15 minutes? Because I'm wondering if I have, you know, and it's, but meanwhile, I'm looking like I, you know, care.
Now, you tell an absolutely hilarious story in this book about your most memorable guest ever. And this was a man that you call in the book Mr. Hochstein. He carried hardly any luggage, and he never spoke to anybody. Tell us about Mr. Hochstein.
Yeah, it was a longtime guest. You know, this was in New York at the time, so we had a lot of business guests that would they lived in Connecticut, let's say, but they would get a hotel room in the city for the entire work week because they didn't want to commute back and forth. They were working long hours, and he was one of those guests, and he would stay so much that, you know, I kept trying to be nice to him and befriend him because he was a loyal guest, but he was always cold, and he never wanted to engage us in conversation, and we're masters at breaking down those walls and making friends. That's our job. But he was always just distant, always distant. And then one day, he never kept luggage in his room, and it turns out that he only had a stapled clothes shopping bag in there. And, of course, the housekeeper went in, and if you see a clothes shopping bag, you just assume, if that's the only thing in the room, that this guest has checked out. So she threw out the bag, and upon throwing out the bag, she noticed that it was filled with sex toys and all kinds of freaky, freaky things. And, you know, that's back to your point about us knowing everything. You would think that it would end there with the housekeeper, but no, the housekeeper tells another housekeeper, that housekeeper tells a laundry agent, and then the laundry agent is telling me, and I'm typing in the room number, and lo and behold, there's Mr. Hochstein standing in front of me, and now we're all privy to this brand new information. We had no idea, and he's wondering where his bag is, and assuming we don't know what it is, but we do.
Now, this is a guy you had sort of wondered about over the course of many months, because he kept coming in so regularly. You wondered what this guy was all about, right?
Mm-hmm, absolutely. I still wonder. Now I wonder even more what he was all about. I mean, we know he's about more than we thought, but wow.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. We're visiting with author Jacob Tomsky about his new memoir titled Heads in Beds that chronicles his years working in the hotel industry. You know, hotels typically have a whole lot in common with each other, and you write this in the book. You know, absurd markups on prices, and emphasis on snob appeal versus service, and stressed staffers who wind up hooked on drugs and booze. Tell us about the absurd markups. How crazy does it get?
Well, I mean, I always suggest you know, that you always look at your bill. You know, one of the biggest secret markups that I would tell your listeners is that if you're ordering room service, you really want to look at that bill, because they're going to tell you it's either going to be on the menu at the bottom or on the check itself. And there's things like per person fees. So if you ask for two plates, you know, they're going to add an additional thing. Usually the gratuity is already added, and then there'll be something called the delivery charge. So you're tipping on top of something that's already very loaded down with these extra charges. So that's one thing to look for. The mini bar is an errant charge all the time. Sometimes, you know, you ask for a roll away, and, you know, they absolutely will give it for you. There might be a charge for that. There might be a charge for the Internet. So it's one of hotels' master hustles to find little ways to just bump up the bill, and you really, as a hotel guest, you want to keep a direct eye on that. Definitely always review your folio.
And besides reviewing your bill, Jacob, what else should you do to sort of, you know, keep control over how much you're spending here?
Oh, sure. Well, you know, oftentimes they'll give you a mini. Avoid the mini bar, obviously. I feel like that one goes without saying. You're paying that. No bag of M&M should ever cost $7. So you want to avoid. You want to avoid that if at all possible. And sometimes ask if they have a mini fridge. Sometimes they'll bring up a separate mini fridge because, you know, guests want to store their own items. And then that way you can get some waters from outside, and you can get some snacks, and you can keep your sandwiches fresh in your little side in a fridge if they have it. But definitely avoid the mini bar. Another thing to avoid, back to the room service, is one good tip is to go ahead and call. Everyone delivers in the area. So if you're interested in eating in your room, get delivery, because that's a professional delivery service, and we all know that sometimes it can take quite a long time for room service to come up, even if you just ordered toast. So if you order delivery in the area, it's going to be from a fine restaurant. They'll bring it right to your room. It'll be hot and fresh, and if you still want to have the experience of dining in room service, you can just call room service and ask for the plates and ask for the setup, and then just enjoy your meal, and you're going to save like $40-$50 just ordering outside of the hotel.
Hey, and why are hotel staffers so stressed? Because you say that's pretty common as well.
It's a difficult job. You know, housekeeping is one of the most physically demanding jobs that I've ever worked in my life. Long hours, bending, scraping, scrubbing, twisting, vacuuming, dragging sheets out, remaking beds. It's incredibly difficult and then rather thankless, because if a housekeeper does her job well, you never see her. And then at the front desk, you know, again, more physical labor. I'm on my feet. I've worked 24-hour shifts. My feet are pounding. I'm multitasking like you wouldn't believe. The phone is ringing. I'm checking someone in. Someone's asking me the gym hours. Someone else needs help with their luggage and all this stuff. So, and then you get into what we spoke of before, when, you know, dealing with irate guests, which is part of the job, and things go wrong, and it's a front desk agent's job to correct that situation to the best of their ability and to deal with that anger. And you add all of that up from every department, from every angle, and at the end of the night, you can be just emotionally exhausted and physically exhausted, and that does lead to the whole housekeeping crew or the whole front desk crew just going out to a bar and drinking some beer and trying to relax the best you can. So it's the same as restaurants. You know, it's a very stressful industry as well, and you know, it's just prone to partying, because you just really have to release after a long day.
You know, at one hotel, you weren't allowed to stand within 5 feet of a coworker because fraternization on duty was forbidden. I mean, really, you couldn't stand within 5 feet of a coworker?
Yeah, they would make us do this thing where you'd put your arms out, and if your fingers touched, you were too close. You know, because it's the illusion of service is what we're providing, especially in a luxury hotel. And if you walk into a hotel, and I mean, if from a business standpoint, this makes sense. If you walk into a hotel and you're ready to check in, and there's no one in line, but the two front desk agents are in the corner looking at a computer and laughing, you know, that's a different feeling than you're like, oh, you know, as a polite person, you might be like, oh, well, I don't want to disturb them. I know they're having a long day. But, you know, imagine the difference if you walk into the hotel and the employees are spaced apart at their terminals, looking at you, smiling and greeting you. That's going to make hotel guests feel a lot warmer and more like they're there to be served. So from a business standpoint, I do see their point, but it gets very difficult if you can imagine being on a job when oftentimes there's perhaps nothing to do. Maybe there's four arrivals and you're just standing there with nothing to do. You can't get on the internet. You're looking out the windows and, you know, looking out the revolving doors and wondering what happened to your life.
Jacob Tomsky is our guest. He's the author of Heads in Beds, that chronicles his years in the hotel industry. If you have a question for Jacob about what goes on behind closed doors in hotels, either behind the front desk or anywhere else for that matter, 816-235-2888 is our phone number here, our email address, UpToDate@KCUR.org, or go to KCUR's Facebook page. You know, you mentioned that staff has access to your room all the time. I'm wondering how much stealing goes on in a hotel, Jacob?
Well, with any job, you know, there's going to be, you know, it's possible that somebody's hired and that person is a thief. You know, we've seen it at airports and baggage handling and things like that. So it does happen. And, you know, I've seen it happen, and I've known coworkers that were, you know, for example, when I was in valet, as simple as coworkers stealing change from a parked vehicle. And then it just goes on from there. But
and you could hear the valet running across the lot when he was running for a car because there was so much change in his pocket.
Yeah,
right?
He was just making too much jingle jangle. Like, how does this guy have so many quarters? Yeah. What's going on with this guy? So, you know, and then it goes up from there, you know, iPods and things. But, you know, one of my least favorite situations to get in was when someone would accuse the housekeeper of stealing, because, you know, in general, we're very happy to have our jobs, and especially a housekeeper, she's aware that the eye is on her, mm-hmm. and the first thing any guest is ever going to do when they come back and something's missing, they can't find an earring, they're going to blame the housekeeper, and that's one of my least favorite things to do, because if anything, she's the last person that's going to steal it, because she knows she's on the line for that, and she values her job. You know, and most usually it was thrown away with the sheets in a common mistake, or the guest forgot to bring it with them. And so, I mean, while it can happen, that can happen anywhere. And I think in general, housekeeping employees and hotel employees are honest people. And that's part of the job, having access to people's stuff and not harming it is one thing you'd want from a good hotel worker.
What does hotel management do, Jacob, when a housekeeper is accused of stealing? Is that person then automatically terminated? terminated, or how are those situations handled?
No, I mean, see, you got to think of it from our perspective. Hopefully in Heads and Beds I do a good job of sort of explaining the interconnected hive and the fact that we're all friends. So when you accuse a housekeeper of stealing, just be aware that the person that you're talking to, they probably know that housekeeper. They're probably friends with that housekeeper. They probably know that that housekeeper would never steal, you know, that she loves her job and she wants to get home to her family, and probably it could have been anyone else. So certainly immediate termination would, unless, you know, these locks, they have readings on these locks. There's electronic keys. So when something goes missing, the first thing security is going to do is get a lock print out, and that's going to show you everyone who was in that room and when they were in that room. And then they start working with the cameras to see who was going in at what time and depending on what item is missing. So they will do everything they can to track down whoever it could be. But like I said, there's a lot of keys out there, and sometimes the guests themselves are really to blame. But, you know, they will investigate it, but they're certainly not going to – first thing, that's why it's bad to accuse. It's go ahead and mention that something's missing, but don't start yelling about housekeeping because it could have been anyone.
You mentioned cameras. How common are cameras in hotels? How much are they on the walls and everywhere to be seen?
No, everywhere. I mean, that was used for us. I mean, I felt like, especially at the end of my job, I felt like I was on, you know, in the Big Brother or something. There's cameras everywhere for the guest safety, but also to make sure the employees aren't doing anything wrong.
Are they in rooms?
No, that's the only place they're never going to be, is in a room. So they can see, you know, and usually they're in the hallway. Sometimes they don't have cameras in the hallway. Always cameras in the elevator. So they can see someone going out of the elevator, let's say at 1102, and then 1103 that lock was entered. So even if you didn't see who was in the hallway, you can assume that whoever left at that moment. But, yeah, sometimes they'll have cameras in the hallways, but never, ever in a room. So that's when it gets a little bit difficult to find out what actually happened and who did what. And then, you know, that's why I would recommend those hotel safes. If there's something you're just really afraid of being harmed or lost or accidentally damaged or just toyed with, putting it in the hotel safe in the room is a great idea.
The Secrets of the Hotel Industry is our guest. We'll be joined by the new speaker of the Missouri House of Representatives in just a few minutes. Our phone number here again, 816-235-2888, and our email address, update@kcur.org. Regina from Lee's Summit, good morning.
Good morning. Just this week, I read that if you wanted to ensure great service at the hotel, when you're checking in, along with your credit card, you should hand a $20 bill to the agent and say, this is just to make sure I get great treatment, maybe late checkout, a bottle of wine, whatever you can do to make my stay great. I'm wondering, is that effective or a waste of my $20 bill?
Good question.
Yeah, I have a feeling you read that somehow through me.
Yes, I have a feeling that's the case too. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was a front desk agent for a long time. It's an undervalued position. And when you think about it in the right way, these are the agents that are deciding which room you have. These are the ones that are in charge of every item on your bill, and the ones telling you no, you can't have a late checkout, and also the ones telling you yes, you can have a late checkout. So and they're not a tipped position. So a gratuity at a front desk to a front desk agent is going to go a lot longer, surprisingly. Now, it's not an infallible system. It's possible, you know, it's the person's first day on the job, and they don't really know what they're doing, and they're going to feel bad, you know, but they'll still appreciate it. Everyone looks good tipping, and there's just a lot of power that we have as front desk agents, and that little bit of kindness, and, you know, like I said, we work long hours, and sometimes we need a beer after work, and if you can make our day better with, you know, buying the first round, we're going to make your stay better by putting a bottle of wine up in your room or making sure you got a beautiful view of the river or something like that.
Regina, I hope that helped.
You betcha. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's go to Blaine from Kansas City, Missouri. Blaine, you're on UpToDate. Good morning.
Good morning. Hi, Jacob. I ordered your book over the weekend. I'm anxious to get it and read it. I've worked in the hotel industry for my entire career, which is over 25 years.
Mm. All right.
I'm currently the I work for a hotel here in Kansas City. But, you know, you said something that really resonated with me, and the fact that you know, the variations in humanity that I think is the way you put it, that you experience with guests. I am constantly, and every time I experience something, I think I'm never going to be surprised again. But then all of a sudden, once again, something happens, and it's like, I can't believe that somebody actually acted that way.
Yeah.
The way people act when they get into hotels, and the way they treat, you know, furnishings and our associates and everything, especially when alcohol is involved, it's just jaw dropping.
If that's the case, Blaine, why do you stay in the business?
Because every day is something different. You know, I would have a really hard time going to an office every day and sitting down and crunching some numbers and going home at 5 o'clock. I mean, every day is completely different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good phone call, Blaine. Thanks for making it. I appreciate it.
Certainly.
Yeah. Jacob, if the drinking glasses taste of furniture polish, should you be surprised?
I wouldn't be. Unfortunately, you know, I've made the point that housekeepers are in charge of cleaning these minibar glasses, and oftentimes they can only clean them with what they have available, and you know, you won't see any dish soap on the cart. So either they'll fill up the sink with hot water and put them in there with some shampoo, or sometimes they'll give them a wipe down with the rag that was used with Pledge, because that actually gives a nice streak-free glass, and that's what's most important. People want to see a glass that's shiny with no spots, and Pledge is a great way to accomplish that. So it's a surprising thing. And I would just, you know, it's probably a good idea to rinse it out quickly, unless you like a little lemon flavor with your water.
Just to break the monotony of a glass of water there.
Yeah, you know, it's like lemon water. It's nice.
If you have trouble accessing your room with your key card, it might mean you've been key bombed. What does that mean?
I do get that question now, and I want to make it clear that if your key doesn't work, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're a bad person. Those keys do deactivate themselves all the time. The strip is very weak. But I did develop at the desk a method called key bombing, and I'm waiting for a front desk agent out there to see if they've done that or if I've invented this method, wherein if I got a new guest checking in, you would want to make them two keys. Of the same type. That would be the best thing to do. That way both keys work for the room. But what I would do, and this would be at the request of a doorman or a bellman if someone said something rude or yelled at somebody the wrong way or said something racist or homophobic, we would, you know, then it could be just key bomb this dude. And what I would do is I would cut an initial key for his room or her room, and then I would cut a second initial key. So now the guest has two initial keys. They're going to go upstairs. Whichever key they use first is going to get them right into the room, no problem. But then chances are the next time they go to their room, they might use the other key, and that's the second initial key. So now it's reprogrammed the lock. Therefore, the first key has been marked as invalid. So then fast forward a little bit forward in time, and you're going to be back at the door with that first key, and you're getting the red light, and you don't know why, and you have no idea that it's traced back 2 days to a front desk agent who key-bombed you because you were incorrect in your attitude.
You were a philosophy major. Maybe it's a good time to bring in your philosophy degree. How did you wind up in the hotel business, and how did that happen?
It was really random. I mean, I went to school in New Orleans, where I'm happy to be sitting right now, actually. And I just studied philosophy because I felt like if I was going to school, I should study something I want to study. And then I got out of school, and I was like, well, I have no skills. So I started parking cars at a restaurant. And that's how it began. I was valet parking at a restaurant, and then I heard tell of a new luxury hotel opening up that was looking for valet parkers there. And
this was in New Orleans, right?
Yeah, this was in New Orleans, and it sounded like a better gig because I was sharing my tips, and it sounded more interesting working in a hotel. You know, back to Blaine saying that, you know, he put it great. You know, it's just such an interesting job. It sounded interesting from the get-go. And so I applied for the job, valet parking at the hotel, and that began my 10 years in the hotel business.
What about valet parking? What are the secrets there? We have one email here from Philip who wrote us at UpToDate@KCUR.org, and he wants to know that one extra charge that he's encountered at hotels is a $10 to park in secured hotel parking lots. Typical?
Sure. You know, there's valet parking. It's difficult because that's a situation where it's really out of your hands. It's almost mandatory, you know, especially in a larger city. You can't find parking yourself, so someone's going to have to take care of your vehicle. And sometimes it's an outside company, and sometimes it's an overnight fee that's exorbitant. And, you really want to watch out when it comes to valet parking. I mean, sometimes you have to. If you need to, again, if we want to go back to the $20 bill, if you're only only there for a couple hours, or you know, you're visiting a friend or something like that, you know, going to have lunch in the restaurant, you know, the doorman can hold and keep your car in the driveway. So that's one tip. The second tip that I would say is,
you're saying he can or cannot hold your car.
Oh, he can hold it. Yeah, the driveway is the doorman's domain. And they love nothing more than with a little extra gratuity. They'll turn your car right around and leave it right out front. And then that you go in and have lunch, and then there's no calling for it. There's no fees outside of that. They'll keep an eye on it for you. So, you know, it's good to be nice to them. And then again, if you do have to valet park, doing a walk around is essential. Just to give yourself that little bit of surety that these marks were already there or not there. That way, if it comes back and there's scratches, you'll know for a fact. Also, if they see you doing that, if you do a visual walk around, they're going to be like, okay, this guy's taking a look at his car, so we're gonna pull it off slowly and be careful because he's aware if we happen to damage it.
Because I guess it would come as no surprise that some valet parkers aren't real careful with your vehicle.
No. I mean, it's... You know, when I was a young kid when I got that job, and you know, you put me behind the wheel of like every luxury vehicle. I mean, it was an exciting time to be me. So you know, you pull off at 5 miles an hour, but the time you get to the third or fourth level, you know, you're really letting it loose and you know, taking the turns. And I had some sports cars up there and a tight garage, and you know, it's, and then there's a pressure to be quick. I mean, that's the funny thing. It's like if you drive the whole thing 4 miles an hour till you bring it home, till you bring it down, it's super safe. But then the guests are all angry that it took 10, 15 minutes to get their vehicle down. And if you drive it, you know, like a race car driver and get it down fast, then they're complaining that they heard a tire squealing. So it's a delicate balance for a valet.
Jacob Tomsky is our guest. He's the author of a rollicking new memoir titled Heads in Beds that takes a look behind the curtains of the hospitality industry. Why did you stay in the hospitality industry as long as you did? 11 years, Jacob.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's back to the point that Blaine made it. You know, it's flexible. It's always different. It's exciting. I grew up traveling. So I was always moving. So working in a hotel sort of calmed that down for me, and I could let everyone else move around me. So that was one reason. Eventually I was just used up and useless, and I was unqualified. You know, I started with philosophy, so I was already almost behind. And then fast forward a couple of years, and I really had no skills other than the hotel business. But you know, again, I've been writing my whole life, and it was always my dream to be a writer. And the hotels were what paid my bills and paid my rent while I was working on my craft. So it just ended up being a wonderful turn of circumstances to begin writing about the hotel. But it always was a job that was there for me and made sure that I had my basic needs while I worked on my writing.
But you also had a dream of becoming the general manager of a property, of a hotel at some point, mm-hmm. but
Absolutely.
That didn't happen. Is that still a goal ever, or are you done with all that?
No, I mean, I realized that... hotels have great starting wages, great benefits, and you're going to get a decent starting wage for the job, and you really don't need any training. So you can go there and just pop in one day and get a nice starting wage. But then once you start to get promoted, which is where I was on that path, you start working like 12-hour days, and then you're on salary, which they refer to as slavery, because before, you know, you were on hourly, so you start working overtime, you're going to get, you know, big fat checks.
Right.
But with management, you're working long hours, and, it, you know, again, this is a business that never closes. It is open on Thanksgiving. It is open on Christmas. Mm-hmm. It is open every day of the year, every minute of the year. And so that becomes difficult when you get into management and they're asking you to come in, and you always need a manager there. And again, it's a difficult job. And then when you break it down hourly, you're making less money. And to get to the GM position, you really have to work hard for a long time in middle management, and middle management does not pay, and it's hard to feel rewarded. So I just ended up sort of backing down to the front desk because, you know, I became sort of a hustler, and I was starting to get tipped and learn how to make extra money and this and that. Mm-hmm. So it was just a much better position for me, and I was focusing on my writing.
In fact, I think you say it somewhere in the book that hotels oftentimes don't even have locks on the front door because, as you said, the hotel's always open.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, you won't find a lock on a hotel door usually. Once they open, they are open. There's always going to be someone inside. Security's looking around, and there's always going to be a front desk agent. So, yeah, there's never a reason to lock a hotel door.
Let's go to Richard from Kansas City, Missouri. Richard, you're on with Jacob Tomsky. Good morning.
Good morning. I wanted to compliment Jacob and all the hotel staff. I travel frequently for business, and one of the first things I do is try to get to know the front desk staff and the bell staff, because they are the lifeblood of a guest. And there's been so many times they've gone out of their way to do something nice for me or my family or the other travelers in my group. I have one story I wanted to tell. I was, I frequently leave my baggage overnight in per stay in like a locked up area. And I, on one occasion, had left my driver's license and my credit card in one of my travel suits. And of course, I didn't realize this until I got to the airport. And being about 30 minutes to 20 minutes away, there was really no chance to go getting back to the travel into the rental car and back to the hotel. So I made a call and talked to the very nice attendant at the front desk person named Michelle, explained my situation. And before I knew it, I had one of the bellmen with my driver license, with my credit card sent to me, and with 5 minutes to spare before I got on the flight. And all they wanted from me was a thank you, and would you please write up a very nice note to the a comment box at the hotel, because that was more valuable than a tip. Wow. So thank you, Mr. Tomsky, and to the whole hospitality industry for being so good to most of your guests.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Richard. That's really nice of you to say, and that's one of the benefits of working in the hotel business, is the ability to help people. And you know, we see people when they're proposing, and when they're getting married, and when they're getting promotions, and all the wonderful things that can happen in their life, and we get to be a part of that. And when service is done well, everyone goes home and sleeps well, and just, you know, it makes the world a better place. So thank you, Richard. That's very nice.
Thanks, Richard.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Yeah. Hey, just briefly before you go, Jacob, give us a sense about sort of the ethic of tipping at a hotel, and what should you tip, what should you not? Because you make a real point that people shouldn't hesitate to do that when they're being treated properly at a hotel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it's always, I think it's always a good look to tip. Everyone appreciates it. I don't think you're going to find anyone, maybe in Europe someone would be offended, but I doubt it. Anywhere in America, where gratuities are quite a nice thing to do. And if you're looking for rates, you know, it does depend on what type of property you're staying at, as well as what level of service. If they, you know, went well out of their way, then you can adjust your tip. But when you're talking about bellman and doorman, I think the rock bottom is going to be $2 a bag. That's just like rock bottom, but they should be happy with that. But then again, I wouldn't say going below $5 ever. If you have two bags, you might as well make that five. Yeah. I make a point that if you can't buy, if the hotel worker can't buy a beer in the area with the tip that you just gave them, then you're not helping them out quite as much as you need to. So it does depend, on what you feel and what's been done, but it's nothing to be ashamed of. It's a wonderful thing to do. So I would not avoid tipping or feeling like you're going to insult anybody. It's quite nice.
And you advise don't treat it like it's a drug transaction, right?
Yeah, it's not a drug deal. I've had so many, I call it the crinkly handshake. Beds. It's like, I've had 20s folded down to the size of a Tic Tac, and it's like the most awkward handshake. I'm like, what is this? What? And then it falls on the ground, and everyone's all embarrassed. I'm like, why did that happen? It's that you can just hand it and just, or put it on the table and say, this is for you. We deal with money all the time. It's just going to, if you're giving it to a front desk agent, it's just going to look like you're getting change. And bellman, and again, that's another point. Some people worry about not having change or the appropriate change. There's change all over the hotel. The bellman have change, the doorman have change, front desk agent has change. And it's not a drug deal. It's actually a kind deal.
So if you need change, don't hesitate to ask for it.
Yeah, no, we got the change. No problem. Because when you say, oh, I don't have any change, it makes you look as if you're trying to get out of being generous. So it's a bad look. So we do have change. So if you really are after change, you should just ask for it. We'll get it for you.
Jacob Tomsky's new memoir is titled Heads and Beds. It's a terrific read. And, Jacob, thanks so much for taking time. I sure enjoyed having you today.
Well, thank you for having me, Scott.
You bet. All the best. Again, that's Jacob Tomsky. Time for a break here. When we come back, the new Speaker of the Missouri House of Representatives, Tim Jones. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR.